Well, I do have a totally different subject, but I wanted to share with all of you those bits of information because I thought they were interesting to all of you to be at least aware, because we are also told to watch. But in this society that we are told to watch in, we are also encouraged to stay connected with God. Are we not? Absolutely. We are encouraged to stay connected with God because that is really the ability, the only ability we have to be able to hopefully fight off and to slap down some of these influences that many of us are subjected to. And frankly, a lot of our relationship with God is dependent on how we belong or sense we belong to God. Let me rephrase that a little bit. In the human experience, all of us have a sense of wanting to belong to something. A lot of people, especially when you're young, you want to belong to certain groups. You want to be accepted. You do things oftentimes under the advancement we call peer pressure just to get accepted into a group. We hear of kids compromising their values, whether they be girls or boys, just to get attention or to become accepted with this particular group of popularity or that particular group of however they are, whether they're the grunge group or whether they're the jocks or whether they're whatever type of group. I mean, my lifetime when I was in school was the hard guys, the racks. Then you had the surfers, the guys who wore no socks with penny loafers. You had all these different types of groups, and it's not uncommon for all of us to want to be part of a group. I think the fact that many orphans who are constantly spending prodigious amounts of money to find who their biological fathers or mothers were goes to this illustration of wanting this connection, wanting to know where I came from, who I belong to, what is it that makes me me? Who were my parents? I know were good because they adopted me, and I'm thankful for that, and they truly are my parents because they're rearing me. But still there's this, and we see it all along, especially with some of these new websites that you can go on and find out your history, your roots of your families. A lot of money is being made in these areas now to hopefully satiate and satisfy the curiosities of people's histories and their families and where they all come from. Gangs today on the negative side of things are out growths, are they not, of these groups wanting people, wanting to be part of a group, wanting to be accepted. And so they have certain initiation items where you've got to go out, you've got to steal a purse, or in some cases even worse than that, to be accepted into the Bloods or accepted into the whatever the gang's name may be in that particular city. On the upside, of course, we have the fact of sports. I think in many regards, team sports teaches you to have a sense of belonging. I know I was quite active in high school with sports and extracurricular sports outside, sponsored by the city that I lived in. And I loved baseball. I loved football. I loved track. I lettered in all of those particular sports when I was in high school, wrestling and so on. Team sports, where you're part of a team of multiple guys and you can't win the game just by you having a good game. Maybe you can contribute to it, but frankly, you know, you're dependent on others because they're your team. And there's a sense of camaraderie and belonging and brotherhood where there's nothing like pulling a game out from the one that you were losing and getting in the dugout or on the sidelines and saying, yeah, we got that one. Hey, good run. You backslap guys because they really did the extra effort and got the points that were needed to win the game. But all of those things are part and parcel to this sense of belonging and satisfying this sense of belonging. But God also has means by which we, as human beings, can get a sense of connection and belonging to Him that I sometimes think we overlook or don't take as seriously as we probably should, so that we can better appreciate that sense of belonging to Him. Because I think sometimes we battle with the fact of just what our relationship is like with God, that barometric understanding, insight that one knows when a storm is coming. We tend to struggle with one knowing, boy, I got a good relationship with God, or boy, I don't have such a good relationship with God. Or it is, I don't have such a good relationship with God, but you really don't have a bad relationship with God. You're just selling yourself short. And I think a lot of times because we don't know how to gauge that connection, that sense of belonging to God, we fail sometimes to properly assess and evaluate the condition of our relationship. The Sabbath day is a very important ingredient and element in your ability to gauge your sense of belonging and your relationship's quality with God. Follow me through this over here in Genesis chapter 2 for a moment. I want to talk a little bit about this sense of belonging to God, and in particular, specifically today, how the Sabbath day, how the Sabbath, and by extension, though I'm not going to address it very technically today or elaborately, but by extension, I would be remiss not to mention even the holy days as well. But we're going to stay focused on the weekly Sabbath day, because the weekly Sabbath day, by the way, occurs 52 times a year. 52 times a year, you have an opportunity to truly leverage or parlay a very important tool in affording you some real value connection that will assure you, that the relationship you have is good or needs to be adjusted, or needs to be a little boosted, needs to have a little revival, whatever it is. But the Sabbath day is an important, important tool that can be used in those areas. And he establishes it right from the get-go here in Genesis 2, where the writer, in this case, we understand, was Moses, writing in the first book here, the Torah, the law, in the book of Genesis. We read in verse 1, "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, all the host of them. God created everything that you see, invisible and visible. And on the seventh day," not the first, second, the fifth, the fourth, but on the seventh day. And there's no question about the fact that the seventh day of your Bible, as described between the books of Genesis and Revelation, without a doubt, unquestionably, is sunset Friday night to Saturday sunset. That is the Sabbath. It's not Sunday. Yet the whole Christian community looks at and gives credibility and homage to Sunday, which is nothing more, again, than a shift that was made and put upon the whole Christian movement from the start, way back in the early centuries, that shifted that day. But as you've been told over and over and over, and I know that I have mentioned this to all of you on a regular basis, the Old Testament was the platform for the New Testament and its development, and here you have, again, a very important part of that Old Testament platform clearly stating, "The seventh day God ended his work which he had made and rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day, sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his works which God created and maintained." So essentially he here in this particular case is showing us that he actually memorialized the seventh day. He memorialized it as a memorial to his creative work that he just completed 6 days of. And so now he creates rest by resting. And he looks back at his work that he did, and on that seventh day, because that's the day it happened. And it's important we let God, as I've often said, be God. God has the right, the prerogative. He's the one who has qualified to define what is right and what is wrong. All our choice is whether or not we will concede and obey. That is really the limitation of our responsibility. We have no right, nor do we have any prerogative to go ahead and try to establish what is right and wrong. When we do that, we are engaging in idolatry, because we're making God into our own image. We are making God to conform to us rather than us conforming to God. And it's important that God does indeed stay in the role of what you could say the ruler and the one who establishes the parameters and guidelines we abide by. Now, there's many covenants that God made with mankind throughout the Bible. You've got the rainbow. You've got circumcision. You've got bread and the wine. The holy days, high days. You've got a lot of little covenants that go on in the Bible of which God has made
to afford us to connect up with to better assure our relationship and to provide us time to build our relationship with Him. Over here in Exodus 31, I want to show you here what, again, Moses' writing explains about the importance of Sabbath, getting back to our topic here, and how it is a sign. Verse 13, and we read, "Speak you also unto the children of Israel, saying, Truly my Sabbaths you shall keep, for it is a sign." Notice that too, by the way, Sabbaths, plural. "For it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know." You see that? "That you may know." It, the Sabbaths, the holy days, the Sabbaths, plural. So why are they there? "So that you may know." Don't just read over that. It's important. That's what they're there for. That's the purpose. "That I am the Lord that does separate you." And it's important, brethren, it's important we are separated from this world. Or in your separation from the world, because you're in the world. Remember when Christ prayed in John 17, "I pray for them, Father, but I pray that you take them not out of the world." Oh, no, 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 no. God's not interested in taking us out of the world. Because why? Because we are commissioned to be the salt of the earth. How can we, if we're out of the world and not interacting in the world, be the lights, be the salt that He intends us to be? Well, obviously we can. So it's important that in our separation, in between our ears, because we understand the values and the principles that should keep us grounded, we control the influences of evil. I say that based on the definition of how it sizes up with what the Bible says is right. That's how I define evil. So with that being said, we then control what comes into us because we know and we execute discipline according to this guideline. And life comes at you fast, so you got to think quick sometimes, because you might be with a group of people that are over drinking. You may be getting, if you're a girl, getting hit on by some guy who just wants to really have a nice night. Then tomorrow, well, goodbye. You know, that's how it goes in some cases when they're too young to be dealing with adult issues. And those things happen all around us. It's important that we understand that we should stay separated. "You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy unto you." And it is holy. It is holy. Like it or not, it is holy. He says here, "For it is holy unto you. Everyone that defiles it shall surely be put to death," in this case. "For whosoever does any work therein, and the soul shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days you should work, be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whosoever does any work in the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations, for a perpetual, ongoing, ever and ever sign or covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and the earth, and the seventh he rested and was refreshed." And he gave these things written on the stones of his very finger that he wrote there. But then, of course, we understand Moses lost his temper. He broke the first tablets, and we pick up the story in chapter 34. So follow me through 34, because now here Moses gets a second set of the tablets, because the hewn two tablets of stone like unto the first there in verse 1 we see. And these were similar. In verse 10 now, dropping down for the sake of time, he says, "Behold, I'm making a covenant." Here's a covenant. He's making a covenant before all the people. "I will do marvels such as I have not done in all the earth nor in any nation." Verse 11, "Observe you that which I command you this day." Why is this important? He's saying, "I command you, observe that which I'm commanding you this day." The reason being is because he knows, even though we may not really appreciate it, even though we may not really get it, even though we may not really allow it to sink into our heads on just how important and valuable it is, he's saying, God is, "Trust me on this, it is really important you observe what I tell you." Because sooner or later, if indeed you ignore this, you will find that if you don't use it, the old adage, if you don't use it, you will stop coming to Sabbath services, stop fellowshipping, stop allowing your life to be guardrailed by these principles and Judeo-Christian values. And guess what will happen? you will become part of this secular, humanistic movement of Epicurean lifestyles. You will. It's in your nature. It's in your DNA. Because we're material. We're physical. It's not in any way, shape, or form, brethren, a mystery to this. God knows. He knows how He made it. He made us subject unto vanity. How do I look? Do I look okay? How do I smell? Do I smell all right? I mean, we're concerned. The car I drive. I look pretty sharp in my car. I feel good about my car. I feel good about my silk tie. I like the silk tie. I mean, we are subject unto vanity. And God says, look. Enjoy those things. But man, don't get your mind stuck on those things. They're all for pleasure and enjoyment. But don't get hung up. Because they're temporary. They're going to go bye-bye. What's most important is getting out of this condition of mortality alive. Not dead. Getting out of this condition of mortality alive. Not dead. And how do you do that? Accept Jesus Christ as your Savior. Repent. Get baptized. And get on with your life according to the model that Christ laid down for us. And that goes for young people too. They need to think about those things. Because all of us who are not baptized are only half there. We really do need to get the rest of our half together in that regard. And get baptized in the way that the apostles and, of course, Jesus Christ illustrated to us. But he goes on here. He says, he encouraged them to break images of the pagan societies that they were going to rule over as Israel, the nation. He goes on here in verse 15, don't make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land. He says, verse 18, the feast of unleavened bread you shall keep 7 days. He goes into the holy days. But now dropping down to verse 21, staying focused on our subject here. 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall rest. And this is interesting. Notice what he says here. Look at this. In earing time and in harvest, you shall rest. Why did he put that in there? Because it's so tempting to work. Oh man, I got to get down to this. I got to do this or I got to do that. He made it very important in the time when you're seeding, plowing, earing, at the beginning, as well as at the end. Man, I got to pick up all those pumpkins. I got to do the wheat. I got to harvest. It's those times when you're most stressed to get things done because you only have a certain window to get it done and you're tempted. He makes a point here, even in those times of high demand, stop, put the brakes on. You're never too busy for God. That's the point. And society, brethren, if it can, will, and Satan the devil wants to nail you on this. He is like a roaring lion out there. He's real. He will scope you out, and he will stalk you, and he will try to wedge his way in. He's like the proverbial camel's nose under the tent, and before you know it, you got the whole camel in the tent, if you allow the nose, because when the nose comes, here comes the head, and then when the head comes in, here comes the shoulders and the front legs, and you better get that camel out of the tent, or the whole thing's going to be in the tent in no time. I mean, that's just a fact of life, because that's the way it works. It's called, ready? It's called, and you know it, that's what's happening here. That's what we've been reading. Did this happen overnight? No. It's happened through incrementalism. Over years, over decades, just chopping away, diluting, getting you to laugh at things on television. Oh, ain't he cute? Oh, look at that. Disarming you. Making it to seem like it's okay, it's not a big deal. What are you so upset about? I even had a guy one time tell me, Bill, you need to chill. I said, chill? I am chilled. I'm cold, all right. I'm cold against this stuff. But nevertheless, that's another story. But at any rate, he goes on here, and he says, you shall observe the Feast of Weeks. And he goes on, these are the whole holy days he lists here. And it's really interesting because this is all part and parcel to the reiteration of the second set of the Ten Commandments. And you got the holy days listed. You never hear about that usually, but I find that very interesting. Over here in the New Testament, though, I want to take your attention back over here because I think this is interesting to look at. Hebrews chapter 4, where we are in a figure of speech here. We're kind of speaking in a metaphor of sort, but nevertheless, it's illustrative of how important the Sabbath day is. The writer here takes us through these through this exercise, and starting in verse 1, "Let us therefore fear, lest the promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it." Now, he's going to use and parlay the Sabbath for this illustration to provide me with the segue I need to get to my first point. And I'm ultimately going to give you a few points here on how to enrich your Sabbath keeping. Verse 2, "For unto us was the gospel preached as well as unto them, but the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith," with belief, with assurance. They didn't believe it down to their bones. "Oh, yeah, the Sabbath is good when I do it, but it's not necessary that I keep it every week." Your outlook, brethren, if you are a religious, and I mean that in the sense of a discipline, Sabbath keeper, your life, do you know your life is defined and guided in with certain guardrails? If you don't eat certain foods, do you know your life is within a certain guardrail? If your life is focused around the holy days, and they come seasonally, do you know you're cocooned in and secured in a lifestyle that has certain guardrails that are for your protection, for your enjoyment, and for your enrichment and assurance that your relationship with God is going okay, assuming, of course, and we'll get to that other point as well, you're using that time correctly. But he goes on here in verse 3 now. Notice this. "For we which have believed do enter into rest." Those of us who do believe, we enter into rest. "As he said, as I have sworn in my wrath, if they shall enter into my rest, all the works were finished from the foundation of the world. For he spoke in a certain place of a seventh day on this wise, and God did rest the seventh day from all his works. And in this place again, if they shall enter into my rest." And you go on here and you read, and then finally in verse 9, it even talks about how, by the way, there still remains a keeping of the Sabbath day for the people of God. And rightly so, because in the figure of the event, you are entering into this rest for the improved connection with God. And in so doing, you are parallel with and in conformity to and in camaraderie with God when you do this. And God smiles. There's no two ways about it. God smiles about the fact that you are taking your time out to honor the holy time he has created. So the first point I want to bring to your attention is it takes commitment, brethren, to do that. It takes strong commitment, because I guarantee there will be things that will come your way to encroach upon your life. And when I say life, you can put in parentheses your time. Your time. Because your time is indeed your life. And God is after your time. He wants you to dedicate your time, parentheses life, to him. To him. And it's important that he sees that in the sense of commitment within the framework of those covenants that he has given you. And again, the covenant we're talking about today is the Sabbath. Psalms 105. Look at this. Verse 1. "Oh, give thanks unto the Lord. Call upon his name. Make known his deeds among the people. Sing unto him. Sing psalms unto him. Take you all of his wondrous works. Glory you in his holy name. Let the heart of them rejoice that seek the Lord. Seek the Lord in his strength. Seek his face evermore. Remember his marvelous works that he has done, his wonders and judgments of his mouth. O you seed of Abraham, his servant, you children of Jacob, his chosen. He is the Lord our God. His judgments are in all the earth. He has remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded to a thousand generations." Are we excited? Are we excited about this connection we have to God? Or are we, "Oh, it's Friday night and I want to go to that dance. Oh, man. Saturday? Oh, I can't go. It's the Sabbath. Oh, I can't take that job. Throw that one out the window. Oh, woe is me. I'm never going to get any work. I'm never going to get any work. I won't get any work." These are precious, brethren. How do we react to these things? Are we really connected to God to say, "You know what, Father, thank you for keeping me from there, because probably wouldn't have been a good influence on me anyway"? Or are we more involved with our own desires that now we're being prevented? And you know what you call that? Let's be frank. We just call that idolatry, because it's more about you now. It's not about God. It's more about you. You're the one disappointed because God said, you can't do that. It's the Sabbath day. So it's important. We do understand that we have to make a shift. We should make a shift into this sense of commitment. It'll make it a lot easier for us in dealing with the certain conditions that we find ourselves guarded from and limited from participating in. I remember I had a job one time, and the guys would always come in on Saturday. They'd always come in on Saturday to kind of summarize what went on Monday through Friday. Well, I would never come in. I always tell them, well, I'll come in on Sunday. And they used to always get mad at me because they wouldn't come in on Sunday. And I said, well, I'm not coming in on Saturday. But I'll be there Sunday, but we won't be, Bill. I said, well, I guess then I can't come on Sunday, because if you're not going to be there. But it impinged. I would be a liar to say it didn't impinge on my relationship in my interaction with the events and the mission of the company. And it did, no question about it. But the bottom line is, these are choices and decisions that we have to make as to what is most important. Some people will respect you for it. Other people will mock you for it. But you know what? What's most important? What God thinks. That's what's most important. Everything else really doesn't rate. It really doesn't rate. And therein lies how real is God to you. And what the Sabbath day provides is a means by which God can be made more real to you, because he's now becoming part of your life due to the disciplines you're implementing in your life to stay within the framework that he's defined. And that's important for you, because those are the items, the reference points that give you assurance of knowing, because you know you're doing the right thing because God said this is the right thing to do. And that's important. So commitment is very, very critical to the movement, to the overall success of how the Sabbath is going to impact you. And understand something as well. No matter what you do on the Sabbath, this is point number two, the Sabbath will always remain holy. The Sabbath stands as a stationary monolith. And it is abstract. It's time and space. And every sunset on Friday, as the earth makes its moves around the sun and rotates and so forth, that Sabbath, in this case 52 times a year at certain times of the day in different parts of the world, because the Sabbath comes to those people depending on their location of the earth at different times, that space is always holy. The question is, what are you doing during that holy time? What are you prioritizing? Where are you spending your life during that time of holy time? Because like it or not, and therein lies the reflection of the leavened world. When you look at that block of time like today, and you see all these cars zooming by, you go to the mall and you see thousands of people at malls, over thousands of malls, you see all kinds of resorts with people at the resort areas by the tens of millions upon millions, all doing their things, shopping, driving, working, doing whatever for themselves, over and over, multiplied by billions of people. You see and understand then, don't you, when looking at it from the perspective of God, that the world is truly out of sync with him. And there is really only a minor amount, a few of those of us on this planet, relatively speaking, that are connected with, and I know that sounds heady, and I know that may even sound egotistical, egocentric, and maybe even a little bit off my rocker, but the bottom line is, according to your Bible, if I'm taking this Bible for what it says, I cannot deny the fact that there are not a lot of people doing what you're doing or what I'm doing or trying to do as we all struggle in this life of attempting to try to limit and minimize encroachments on our walk with God through Christ. So it's important we realize that regardless of what we do on the Sabbath day, the Sabbath will always remain holy, because over here, and I'm going to turn there to Mark chapter 2, the Sabbath was made for man. Remember, man was not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made so that man could benefit from it. It's all about you. That's what God... The Sabbath was actually God's first outreach to man, to provide him time that he would, if he connects with God, recognize as time well spent, if indeed man would take that time to augment, improve, and accentuate his relationship with him. And the Sabbath was really, it was the first, from the get-go, outreach from God to us. And here Jesus, in Mark chapter 2, his words, I'll break in the context in verse 23 real quickly here, where we read, "And it came to pass, he went through the cornfields on the Sabbath day." These were wheat fields, basically. "And his disciples began as they went to pluck the ears of the corn. And the Pharisees said unto him, Behold, why do they on the Sabbath day that which is not lawful?" And they were threshing. Basically, they were taking the wheat and they were kind of taking it to get to the kernel. And when in the Mishnah, oral law, the Pharisees says, well, if you do this, that's work. It wasn't anything about the Ten Commandments. It had nothing to do with the Torah. It was the Mishnah. It was the oral law. That's what they're taking Jesus to task with here. And Jesus, like I've said many times, pulls his hair out on these guys because they're so self-righteous, they're so minuscule and pea-brained in their views of things, and their attempt to try to legislate righteousness was just maddening to Jesus. And this is a perfect example of some of the idiocy that was associated with some of these oral laws. In verse 25, Jesus proceeds. He says unto them, "Look, have you never read what David did?" Here's King David, a man after God's own heart. "When he had need and was in hunger and hungered, he and they that were with him, how he went into the house of God." He went into the temple in the days of Abiathar, the high priest, and did eat the showbread right off of the, on the altar. He took the bread. He took the holy bread because he was hungry. God isn't that impractical and unrealistic. God's very pragmatic about things. And so David knew he wasn't out of line in doing this, which is not lawful to eat, but the priests, and gave also to them which were with him. He said unto them, "The Sabbath, look, was not made to be a burden." It's not, oh man, it's Saturday again. I got things to do. I want to go and this and that. No. It's not a burden. We got to get through that to where we're not keeping the Sabbath because we have to. We're keeping the Sabbath because we want to. We get to a point where, because we've kept it for so long, that there really truly is now an appreciable benefit, and we see it, to unplug from our daily duties, to just enjoy the family, to kick back and unwind and just enjoy some time with God and just get all of this other stuff out of our mind and just exhale for a moment for 24 hours. Meet friends and just no pressure and relax a little bit. That's tremendous. It's tremendous for the blood pressure. I mean, it's just beneficial all the way around, from the physical to the spiritual. It is so important that we do it. And some cases, and I know I was like this, it was hard for me to even learn how to relax. I remember going to the Feast of Tabernacles many occasions where it took me at least 4 days to finally, I'm at the feast. Because I'm still all wound up from working and all that. And it's just the way it is. But bottom line is, in this particular case, verse 27, Jesus says the Sabbath was made for man, for his benefit. Not the reverse. Man wasn't made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath is not this burden. Sabbath doesn't have to be served by man. No. Man is served by the Sabbath. And if it isn't serving you, then you need to really ask yourself some hard questions and be bold about it. What is it that you don't like about the Sabbath? Why do you feel the Sabbath is impinging and straining your style for whatever you may be thinking? Because these are questions that certainly are not intended for God, for you, that is, in terms of God's mind. He doesn't want you to be thinking along those lines. Now, also, in this particular case, we... obviously, with the Sabbath, have time. And I told you I'd get to this point. This is point three. How we use the time on the Sabbath is critical. Now, the Sabbath was created for rest, but if all you do is rest on the Sabbath and you go home and go to sleep, obviously it's not benefiting you to where it could, or maximizing the benefit to you. So, therefore, how you use the time on the Sabbath is very important to the value impact that you're going to get from it. Here in Ephesians chapter 5, I just want to bring your attention to this. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 11, we read this, And it's very direct, and Paul is very protective of the Christians, and he's laying down some parameters here and suggestions on things we as Christians need to be aware of, as these folks needed to be aware of in the society at the time they were living in. And things haven't changed, really, in many respects. Verse 11, he says, "Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them, confute them, convict them, admonish them, tell them their fault, rebuke them." In other words, don't be shy about the fact that if somebody really gets out of order with you, don't be a people pleaser. Don't feel as though you always got to say yes, yes, yes to everything that comes your way or that's put upon you. You have boundaries. You ever hear that term? You have boundaries, or you should have boundaries. And those boundaries, if you don't have them, here's a good place to start. This is a good place to start, especially in the world that we're living in, because these boundaries will keep you safe. They will keep you safe. You don't have to worry about a whole lot if you stay within the guardrails of these boundaries. It's when we lose a sense of bearing with our boundaries, and unfortunately so many, especially young people, but adults as well. I mean, certainly it's not just exclusive to young people, although they are more vulnerable because they're still looking for their identities, they're still growing up, they've got a lot of hormonal activity going on, there's a lot of things that are happening. But the bottom line is, you have to have boundaries. The sooner you come to grips with what defines you, what your values are, what is you, your id, what you want people to think of you to be, the sooner you get to that point, the better off you are, especially if you're using this as your platform, because this will never steer you wrong. And if ever you're in doubt about smoking this or drinking too much of that or getting on your back for him or whatever it may be, hey, guess what? Go back to that and say, "No, I don't do that. Pass me by on this one. I'll see you. I'm going home." Have a little respect, you know. It says confute. Somebody comes up to me, hey, I'm going to have some respect. Hey, I don't do that. Back off. Say no. You can do those kinds of things. And if they don't like you because you're not going to take that toke or you're not going to drink that 14th beer, well then, guess what? You don't need those kinds of friends. They're not looking out for you. They're all about themselves. And they're certainly not caring about you if they're trying to pull you down into that kind of muck. But we have to have the character and the ability to say no to those kinds of things. He says, reprove them, Paul says. Verse 12, now chapter 5, book of Ephesians. "For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. But all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light. For whatsoever does make manifest is light. Wherefore he says, awake you that sleep, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give you light." And all he's saying here is, you'll be surprised how all of a sudden things get simplified in your life if you stand up for what's true, for what's right. If you stand up for these things, all of a sudden things get pretty simple. Because guess what? All of the deadheads and all the deadbeats leave you, and you're able to see more clearly about the things that really matter to you and, of course, to God. So Paul's saying, have some courage. Be bold. Don't be afraid. Don't be insecure. Be strong. And if people are trying to use or abuse you or get you to agree to things that you don't want to be involved with, hey, you just stand up for those things and manifest them for what they are. That's what he's saying. Verse 15, "See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise." Now here's what I like. "Redeeming the time, because the days," here's Paul, almost 2,000 years ago, saying, "the days are evil. Redeem the times, for the days are evil." Do good. Get your relationship with God right now. That's important, because the times are evil. And guess what? You're not getting any younger. We're all in the process of dying. Some of us are closer to the finish line. Others of us are a little bit further down, further away from it. But nevertheless, we're all declining toward that bondage that we call death. And at some point, we're all going to go to hit the dirt and go to sleep for a while until that resurrection occurs. And he says here in verse 17, "Wherefore, be you not unwise, but understanding." Here it is. Don't be unwise. What is the definition, the biblical definition of being unwise? Well, here it is, not knowing the will of God. Because he says here, wherefore, be you not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. So if you don't understand what the will of the Lord is, you're being unwise. That's what he's saying. To be unwise is not to know what the will of God is in your life. And to not to know what the will of God is in your life is not to read this. I could put this up on my bookshelf, never look at it again, go my merry way, do what I want to do, and guess what? That would be unwise. Because I'm going to die. And at some point, I'm going to have to stand before God, Christ as well, and answer for what I did. And my legacy, your legacy, whatever legacy we are in process of attempting to develop, should be a wise legacy. And a wise legacy is one that's connected with, in parallel with, and within the guardrails of the will of God. That is important. Over here in the book of Colossians, real quickly here. Book of Colossians as well. Again, Paul writing to the people there at Colossae. And in chapter 4, we read, masters, give, that is, you owners of businesses and companies as well, give unto your servants, your employees, I like to use the metaphors in that regard as well, that which is just and equal. Don't take advantage of your employees, you people who own your own businesses. Knowing that you also have a master in heaven. Continue in prayer and watch in the same with thanksgiving, with all praying also for us that God would open unto us a door of utterance to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in bonds. And this is important, brethren, what I'm reading here, that I may make it manifest as I ought to speak, walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time. Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. What is he saying? He's saying here to these Christians in Colossae, be prepared to give the reason for the hope that's within you all the time. Be ready to answer, to kick back, to say, hey, guess what? I don't do that. Or, you know what? Steve, I don't think you should be doing that. That's just not the right thing, man. It's not consistent with what we believe. It's not consistent with what we think. It's not the right reflection. Would Christ do that? What would Jesus do in that case? Well, he wouldn't do that. Well, then we better not do that, because that's just not the thing to do. Instead, what we ought to be doing is reflecting to manifest that which Christ would do, so that those who don't understand what Christ would do do understand what Christ would do through you. Through you. And then in so doing, they begin to understand, ooh, boy, well, maybe I should change, hopefully. You know, we tend to think, well, did you ever see one good apple turn a barrel of apples good? And we say, well, that doesn't happen. Usually one rotten apple spoils the whole bunch. Well, yeah, but that's in the fruit world. Taking people on one-on-one can be a very exhilarating experience, because guess what? Sometimes, at some point, as long as you just don't give up and you hold your line, you might win one or two through Christ working in you. So don't give up, because you don't know who God is calling. You don't know. That's not your call. That's not your judgment. They may be what appears to be the biggest loser, foul-mouthed individual that you think, man, there's no way in God is going to call that guy. But you never know. You never know. And far be it from us to make those judgments on people and write them off and say, yeah, they're lost. You know, we'll see him in the second resurrection. No. That's not your call. That's very judgmental, and that's God's call. That's God's call. So it's important that we understand that we need to be bold and we need to be courageous in these particular cases. But now, it isn't going to happen without building a sense of confidence. And that confidence comes with evidence in your life. And this takes me to the fourth point here, where essentially this connects up almost, you could say metaphorically, it links up with your baptismal sense of commitment. And that is that sense of commitment you had when you went under the waters of baptism to please God. You remember how excited you were in those early days, those early years when you were in your first love and you wanted to really do nothing but please God, because, man, that all was really what mattered to you. This fourth point is very important in that regard, and that is that you must renounce and renew daily. Renounce and renew, because the renouncement and your ability To exercise the discipline to say no, to put something down and throw it under the bus, is important for you because those are your successes. Those are your successes. And those are evidentiary items that give you confidence and allow you to develop more security in your walk with God so that you can be more, a more confident reflection of God in you, Christ in you. If you're not showing any evidence, if all you're doing is listening, never doing, you're not a doer, you're not a deed worker, you're not on a sense of mission to engage change in your life and actually be proactive in the conversion process, but you do come to church, you do certain ritualistic things in the lifestyle, then guess what? You're missing a real value. You got to make this real, brother. You got to make this real. We got to control our tempers. We got to control our language. We got to try to interact in our relationships to not dictate. Not in the fashions of authoritarian rule, but engage each other. And we, as people, need to be courteous enough to go ahead and take those engagements and work with them. Over here in Ephesians 4, again, notice this, Ephesians 4, and in verse 20, chapter 4, Ephesians, and in verse 20, you have not learned Christ. If so, be that you have heard him and have been taught by him, as the truth is in Jesus, that you put off concerning the former conversation. Here's a renouncement. You put off the former conduct. That's what the word conversation means. You put off those former behaviors. This is the renouncement. The old man, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lusts. And we are. We're terrible in trying to justify ourselves. We constantly, all of us are subject to that. The heart is deceitful above all things. We human beings are the, what you could say, most gregarious species in being able to justify, rationalize, and make excuses for ourselves. To participate in something that we know we shouldn't be doing, but somehow we can rationalize our way through it and still be able to get it done and say, well, you know, that was all right. You know, I'm sure I'm doing okay. But no, it's... We got to be careful about that. We need to understand that our heart is deceitful. We have deceitful lusts in us. It's our nature. It's in our DNA. Verse 23, be renewed in the spirit of your mind. So this is the renewal. You renounce and renew. You renounce and renew. Daily we're doing that. That you put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness, wherefore putting away, and here he gives you these specifics, don't lie. Don't lie. Stop lying. Be truthful. Be honest. Do you know how relaxing it is when you're just a truthful person and transparent? I am what I am. You see what you get. You don't have to worry about, well, what did I tell him? I told him, I remember now. I got to tell. And then all of a sudden you told this person a different lie. You told that person a different lie. You got to remember all these lies. All of a sudden you got to have a day timer or an iPad to kind of remember which lies you told the other guys so that you're on tune with all the lies and there's consistency and continuity with them. But he says here, no, get away from that. Speak every man truth with his neighbor. For we are members one of another. Be you angry and don't sin. In other words, I can get angry. I'll pick on Steve. I can get angry at Steve. But I shouldn't throw him under the bus. He might do something that disappoints me or vice versa. And he can get angry at me. Maybe I didn't return a tool I borrowed from him. I know what kind of person you are. That's okay. He can bawl me out on it. But shucks, I hope he doesn't hate me for it. And if I wanted to borrow another tool from him, I hope he'd still give it to me because he forgave me. And I apologized. Maybe. But my point is here, you can get angry, but you don't throw people under the bus. You don't just write them off just like that. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath. And that's especially with children, husbands, wives, friends. If you've got something against somebody, try to get it resolved as soon as you can. Don't let it fester, because festering is just going to ultimately give time for it to convert into bitterness. And once it gets into a root of bitterness, it becomes very, very difficult to overcome because it now crosses the line into that emotional realm. Let him that stole steal no more. Don't steal things. Rather, let him labor, work with your hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give him that needs. Wow. Work so you can be charitable. Work so you can become rich with goods so that you can give it away. That's why, you know, I've said it before. I admire a guy like Buffett, Bill Gates. I mean, with what they are, and if they are being true with what's been publicized about their fortunes, and they have a lot of money, most money in the world, it's a couple of those two guys, one of the two richest men in the whole world, and what they're doing with their fortunes is admirable. I mean, it is admirable in spite of what they could be doing, regardless of their human nature and so on. So it's really amazing. And they understand this even without understanding it. And that is the way to do it. You work hard. You hopefully aspire for success for the purpose of giving, being charitable. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers and grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, whereby you are sealed unto the day of redemption. Let all the bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice, and be you kind, verse 32, one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. Real quickly here, Colossians chapter 3. Real quickly, Colossians chapter 3. And again, and in verse 8 we read, but now put off renouncement. You put off all these. How excited were you when you first became converted? How excited were you when you were contemplating baptism to get your life right with God, to get rid of all this anger, to get rid of the vulgarity, to get rid of whatever other habit or vice that you might have that you knew was pulling you down and throwing you kind of into the realms of negativism and so on? How excited were you? Passionate. How were you? Well, that's what Paul is trying to say here to the Christians of Colossae. Lie not one to another. Again, he says in verse 9. Verse 10. Have put on the new man, which is renewed in the knowledge after the image of him that created him. And again, how do you renew yourself if you're not bringing in information? You can't renew yourself, brethren, if you're not taking time during the week, not just on Sabbath day, during the week when you're reading your Bible. That is where the knowledge comes. That's where the renewal comes. That's where the time of refreshment comes, on the Sunday through Friday days also, not just Sabbath days. You've got to not just take your Bible off the shelf when you're on your way to church. From time to time I get a kick out of people saying it's Wednesday or Thursday. Hey, where's my Bible? Have you seen it? around anywhere? Oh, I haven't seen it all week. And unfortunately, that's how some of us are. We put the Bible down on Sabbath afternoon after we get back from church, and we don't pick it up until we go to church again the following week. We shouldn't be that way. We need to truly be more engaged in that. He goes on, there's neither Greek nor Jew, uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, bond nor free, all but Christ, all and in all. So these are the things, brethren, that we need to truly do the best we can. I could illustrate Isaiah 58, but I'll just point you over to Isaiah 58, verse about 13 and 14, where it talks about, again, the Sabbath day. The Sabbath is a very, very important portion of time. It will benefit you in a maximum way if you commit to it, realizing, point two, that it's holy time, whether you commit to it or not. And so therefore, if you do commit to it, point three, use it. Use it to benefit yourself in your relationship with God. Because observing the Sabbath, is the will of God. It is the will of God. And use that time to grow in the ability to renounce and renew your relationship and the boundaries, the identity of those boundaries in your life. And if you do that, the time will be so well spent that your relationship with God will indeed flourish by leveraging that covenant that He has with you, if only you will remember the Sabbath day.